Hello, my name is Gabriela.
And my name is Andreina. And this is Wicks and Candles, a podcast about two sisters and their obsession with period film.
We want to dig into our favorite films and review them. Find out why we love them, how they've shaped us, and what effect do they have on us.
Join us on a trip through palaces and manors, balls and tea parties, and a lot of dresses, carriages, and of course, wicks and candles.
In this episode, Cyrano de Bergerac.
So on today's episode, we travel to France and take a look at one of the most iconic period films from the early 1990s. So Gabi, why Cyrano de Bergerac?
Oh, Nene, I guess the question would be, why not? How not to? It is certainly a classic in this genre. It is a wonderful romantic story set in a beautiful time and just very well done. And I must say, this film took us head over heels and even sparked our love for the French language. I'm not really sure about the time, but I'm pretty sure that this film mainly influenced our love for French language. And we started taking lessons after seeing this film. So it was definitely a must in our podcast. So maybe you can give us some facts about the movie, just to start.
Sure, I can do that. So the film Cyrano de Bergerac is based on the theater play Cyrano de Bergerac, which was written by Edmond Rostand in 1897. So this is a 19th century theater piece. However, the story takes place in the late 1600s, in the 17th century. It tells the story of a poet with a prominently big nose who is in love with a beautiful woman, who's actually in love with someone else. Because of his nose, he doesn't dare to open up and confess his love. So he borrows his skilled feather and speech to the man she's madly in love with. There's a lot of intrigue, drama, some humor, and all of this leads to a very romantic story. So the adaptation of the play came out in 1990. There's been a few other adaptations over the years since the play is from 1897. This particular adaptation was directed by Jean-Paul Rapneau, and it features a truly amazing Gérard Depardieu as Cyrano de Bergerac. It features Anne Brochet as Roxane, Vincent Perez as Christian de Neuvillette. So when this movie came out, or when it was done, it was the most expensive production in the film industry until that moment. It cost 100 million francs to make. So after this film, he even found his way into Hollywood. He's kind of launched his Hollywood period of his career. And it also was a big award winner right when it came out. So some of the most important awards he received went to the costume design. The designer was an Italian woman, Franca Squarciapino, and she won the Oscar, the César, and the BAFTA for her work in Cyrano. Other awards that are very important, Gérard Depardieu won Best Actor at Cannes. He also got the César, the equivalent of the Oscars in France, the César for Best Actor. And the film also took the Golden Globe for Best Foreign Language Film in the 1991 ceremony.
Thank you, Nene, for that short summary, which I think gives us the right spot to start a conversation. Yeah, because when we say it was such a successful film, then we know we're talking big cinema here. Yeah. So yeah. I think one of the things that made this film so special and maybe why it was so popular on screen, not only in Europe, but also in America, was the entire setting. And I think this maybe would be the first topic we can talk about, the entire setting of the film. So mm-hmm. what was your impression of the production while you were watching the film?
Yeah, I think this is a big win. I think this is a big, this movie was so successful because, like I mentioned earlier, the story of Cyrano, which was a real life character, takes place in the later part of the 17th century. So obviously it's a period film with, period costumes and period settings and landscapes, and it all takes place in Gascogne, which is a region of France, and they had this very particular kind of dressing, and you know, with lots of Spanish influence, and you know, the Oscars and the BAFTA and the César all gave the award to the, you know, the costume designer, this Italian lady, and I think it's absolutely deserved. It's absolutely beautiful, and it's also a period that we don't get to see that much in movies. Period movies tend, you know, what we know, what we call period films, tend to be, you know, Jane Austen adaptations, a lot of British films, and also usually covering the later part of the 19th century or early 20th century. And this is taking us a couple centuries back in terms of historical costume. So I think it's absolutely beautiful from the, you know, talking about the costume, but also the setting. This is based on a theater play, and you wouldn't know it. The film is so dynamic. We have a theater scene, we have street scenes, we have a harbor scenes, we got war scenes, we have the setting, you know, the Roxanne's house. So there's a lot of different locations where this film had to be filmed, and it truly brings to life, you know, a 17th century city to brings it to life. I think it's quite beautiful, and it takes place in the summertime as well, for the most part, which makes it really romantic and evocative. What do you think, Gabby?
Well, I think you mentioned a key fact that makes this production beautiful to the eye, to the viewer. And it is, as you mentioned, that it is based on a theater play. So this combination of film and theater brought to life in such a skilled way by the producers, it's really refreshing and also kind of extraordinary, because you see throughout the film that it's just a setting for the scene. Yeah, some of the rooms that they took for the some scenes are kind of naked. They're very minimalist. Yeah. So you really have that theater feeling in some of the scenes. You know, there's a scene where all the soldiers are in their quartier, and there's very little furniture, very naked walls, very little furniture, and there's a lot of dialogue. So through some scenes, you get a very theater feeling during the film, and which kind of also makes you aware, okay, what is important right now, it's what the actors and what the characters are saying to each other and not the setting. And in contrast, as you mentioned, all these outdoor scenes, which are majestic, yeah, there are some scenes on huge fields because some of the story takes place during the war. So they really didn't play little, yeah. They went big time. And they chose very wide shots, for the outdoor scenes.
Yeah.
So it's a nice contrast of, you know, a lot of glamour on the view, not really on the setting itself, but on the views, and a certain minimalism to keep feeling throughout the story.
Yeah, well, that's such an interesting point because, yeah, I agree with you. Some of the locations, for example, Roxanne's house, the quartier or the where the soldiers live and train, they are very bare. They basically just kind of tell you the stand-in for these two locations. There's almost nothing there. But the contrast is, I will say, in the directing and in the editing, because despite being very, let's say, theatrical that way in terms of those settings and locations and interior decoration, it is absolutely a dynamic film. There's one key scene that we're going to talk about perhaps later. It takes us from inside the theater to the streets. And it's an absolutely marvel of directing and editing because one thing that we have to mention is that this movie is the text of this theater play was written in Alexandra, so it's all in, and the text of the film of the script was kept this form, so the entire text of the movie is Alexandra, so it has this rhythm, this musicality. I think the director and the editors did an amazing job of mirroring that rhythm and musicality with their editing. So you have an absolutely film that is not static at all in any way. Truly, the walls of the theater are, you know, pushed to the side. Like, really, the theater comes to life. It is a movie. It is not a movie based on a play. It's truly a movie adaptation. So I think in that sense, it is an absolute triumph.
Absolutely. And I think you have also captured a few key spots, this dynamic rhythm of the film. It is all very fast paced. And this pace is given by the text, by the script itself, by the dialogues. And as you mentioned, because it is based on this poetry, so it this is really giving up the space throughout the story.
Yes, that's right. It is really wonderful, and I think this is what the magic of movies can give you, which is you have the visual, but you also have the sound, and in this movie they are married perfectly. And you mentioned, you know, earlier that this was the movie that inspire both of us to learn French. We literally became obsessed. We fell in love with the sound of the language. I mean, what a better introduction to French than a film that celebrates a play that celebrates the beauty of French language, because this is what Constant was doing, in fact.
Yes.
So I think it was not for naught. I think it was kind of meant to be.
Yes, it was meant to be. What it's meant to be. We were really fascinated by the musicality of the language. It is just a wonderful music, very musical language to listen to, and I think that took us really, really took us by surprise, and captivated us for a long time.
Yeah, and both studied French at the time. We started taking French lessons, and later on I moved to Canada, and I moved to Quebec, and I continued to learn French. And, you know, it is an absolute pleasure to be able to watch this movie today, in fact, understand it. And, you know, that kind of quadruples the pleasure. I mean, it truly is a joy to be able to, I mean, what a privilege to be able to watch this movie and understand the language without having to, you know, read subtitles. It truly brings another level of happiness to my heart.
Yeah, well, I still needed the subtitles. My French didn't go that well. I dropped my French lessons too early. But of course, now as a grown-up, I can appreciate it much more better than back then.
But, yeah.
Yeah. But this was really a key film in our formation, in our education. Identification with, you know, first of all, with French, with Europe, with the time and so on. So, yeah, absolutely, absolutely outstanding. And I mean, this is not a surprise why the film was so successful. And now that we have talked about the entire setting and the production and the rhythm of the film, of course, we kind of have to drop a word or two about the costume design, which was also so highly awarded all over the film festivals in that year.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's, you know, we've said this, and I think we're going to be saying this in every episode of our podcast. We are not costume historians. We are not costume experts, but we do watch a lot of period films. So, I mean, take this with a grain of salt. I think these costumes are very true to the period, and I think they, you know, they bring the period to life. In every sense. I mean, the thing with costume in period film is that they have to support the story. They have to support, like in any movie, they have to support the character and so on. But in period film, they tell much more about the characters than just their personality. They talk about class. They talk about role in society. They, you know, costumes were much more codified that way in the past. So I think this movie does an amazing job, you know, Roxanne with, oh my God, those extremely beautiful gowns with the bauble sleeves. And yeah, I think everywhere. And, you know, this is the period of the cartwheel colors. There's a lot of frilly colors around in all of the men, and also a lot of uniforms.
And a lot of capes and feathers.
Yes,
this is very unique for period films, because as you mentioned before, this is not a time that it's often seen in films. Yeah, so
yes,
so the entire fashion of those days, it really is really remarkable. You know, all these feathers on the heads of the men and all these capes, and the cape played a big role in the life of Cyrano, because he could hide his nose behind his cape. And since they also use so many hats, the men also use wide hats, he could also hide his face under the hat. So I think this is all super nice combination of the setting, the time, the costumes, and what did it mean for Cyrano to be able to wear a cape and a hat? You know, it makes it all very like mysterious.
Oh my God, Gabby, such a yes, absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And this is one example of, you know, costume being much more important than just, you know, being looking pretty. It has an absolute meaning. These are men who were fighting on the streets, who carry swords to fight, to protect their honor and the honor of other people, which, you know, is a characteristic of Cyrano. And yes, you know, it's all very majestic and very elegant and very heroic.
And very pompous. Yeah, very pompous.
And very
because
pompous.
It was all very fluffy. There was a lot of fabric. There's a lot of fabric flowing around. And I think the producers, of course, took also this element and built it in the story. You know, also mm-hmm. the presentation of the film itself, it's just a silhouette of Cyrano with a big white hat and a cape. So
yeah,
it does play a role.
Yes, and if I can add something, you know, often period films, you know, it's all about the female costume, because they were much more showy, and a lot of emphasis is put on the female clothing. But this is a movie where the men's clothing is super important, and it really features so prominently throughout. So that's also something quite interesting to see.
Maybe we are ready to discuss about the main characters. Let's see, what do you have to say about Cyrano himself?
Yeah, Cyrano is a heroic character. Cyrano is a poet. He has a brilliant mind. Obviously, he's an artist, but he's also a fighter. He's also we can see it on a very early scene when he does a duel where he uses both his sword and his words. I mean, he's absolutely a brilliant man that can not only rhyme and make poetry as he fights, but he can fight. He can duel very well. He's a soldier.
He's a soldier. So I think it is maybe important to mention when we talk about Cyrano that he is the absolute personification of the romantic hero. Yeah,
yes.
Because of this combination, yeah, what you just mentioned, being skilled with a sword and also sensitive and romantic in the words, it is the absolute definition of the ideal romantic hero. Yeah,
I agree. Yeah, so Cyrano, he's skilled with his sword and his feather, his pen. But I don't know. I mean, the fact that he was ashamed of his nose. I don't know what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, it gives him a certain insecurity. That's maybe the fascination of the story of Cyrano. Yeah, that even though he was a proud soldier and he knew very well that he was good at both. Yeah, that he was good at writing and good at fighting. He still had this weakness. He knew he had this weakness that he felt he was ugly. Yeah, and that makes it at the same time very human and very humble. Yeah, there is one scene just after this opening scene that you have mentioned already a couple of times. This opening scene in the theater where he duels about his nose. It's a long monologue about his nose. And you see him also fighting at the same time with a sword. There's just shortly after, there's a scene at the bakery. The baker later on at the bakery, and he's sitting all by himself in the back room of the bakery waiting for Roxanne. They were supposed to meet, and he sits there and he looks at himself at the mirror, and that's one of the few moments where you see this is not the proud, you know, super self-confident Cyrano that I just saw in the first scene. This is a very humble, insecure, very, human Cyrano. Not the hero he was playing, but the very human Cyrano who's just very ashamed of his nose.
Yeah, you know, and that makes me character. This is an old play, so there must be a million interpretations of this character, obviously. But you know, it could be, you know, how he compensated for how ashamed he was of his nose. He compensated by being brilliant at everything else. And there's something very French. Oh yeah, this is like the most French of French characters. I mean, French language loves itself.
Yes. Well, and the French love French.
And the French people love French, and therefore French, everybody else love French because they can show you, you know, what a language can do, what a language can be, how it can represent the soul of a people. You know, and how elevated and how intelligent and how beautiful and elegant a people can be, or, you know, the elevation of thought made language, right? So Cyrano kind of compensates for this nose by being the most French of French, the most beautiful of all French with his language. Yeah, so now that we talk about Cyrano, what do you think of Roxanne as a character?
Yes, Roxanne. We have to say the actress who played Roxanne was very young. And this is, I think, if my research is correct, one of her first films that she ever made. So you see, she's full of energy and plays the character of Roxanne exactly to the point, I would say. So you have the impression of Roxanne being a very self-assured woman who knows exactly what she wants and nothing else, and who knows exactly how she can affect people, what effect she has on people. So she is very self-confident, very self-assured. Even though we're looking at 1640, 1650, so we know that women didn't have the best of positions back then. So this makes, of course, the character of Roxanne much more interesting. You know, she was in a time where, you know, women were kind of, you know, kind of not having the best cards in the hand. She was very confident and yeah, very self-assured. And this is, of course, for the entire platonic love relationship between Cyrano and Roxanne. It's very sparkling because, you know, these are two very intelligent persons. Minds are attracted to each other, yeah, because as we go deeper in the conversation, we will know, we will talk about this. They were in love with each other's minds, yeah. So Roxanne knew the words of Cyrano, and she loved it. She loved a good, educated, well-versed man, yeah. And Cyrano could offer this, and he knew that she liked that, and she would appreciate it. So this is a very, very intellectual relationship between these two persons.
I agree 100% that this is an intellect. This is a meeting of the minds. It's
a meeting of intellectual, the minds.
An intellectual relationship. So Roxanne is Cyrano's cousin. So they've known each other since childhood. He's loved her forever. He's been in love with her since he was a young boy, I guess. And then during the opening scene, which happens in a theater, but it eventually kind of brings all the characters, introduces all the characters, she sees Christian de Neuvillette, played by Vincent Perez, for the first time. And vice versa. Christian sees Roxanne for the first time. So it's kind of for love at first sight, but let's call it attraction at first sight, because they don't know anything about each other. They know nothing about each other. They only, you know, they see two attractive people, very beautiful. But Roxanne has known Cyrano for a long time, and after his entire display with the duel of, she, you know, it reiterates how brilliant he is, and she asks for his help in meeting Christian. So that's why this meeting happens at the bakery, because she's come to ask him, "Can you help me? Can you help me meet Christian? Can you protect him? He's in your regiment. How can you help us?" And obviously, Cyrano is extremely disappointed. He thought she was coming to declare her love for him. But we can see that Roxanne, like you said, is a very intelligent woman. She's a very refined, elegant. She's of a deeper, she has a deeper character. However, we can see that, you know, even somebody like that can fall in love with somebody because they're beautiful. As Christian is. Christian is, il est très, très beau. He's really beautiful in this film. And they needed a beautiful face like that. I mean.
Oh my gosh. And they really found the very best. We have to.
The very best face.
For the, we have to make a stop here, because we have to add something. Why we love this film, one of the reasons why, definitely has to be Vincent Perez. Because he was so handsome back then. He is still a very handsome actor. And he has just such a fascinating face that is magnetic. It's magnetic on the screen. So, yeah. So Roxanne, of course, she wanted the full package. So she saw this very beautiful man. And of course, she wanted him to also be romantic and the romantic hero she idealized.
Yeah. Ah, that's right. She wants the full package. Of course. Who wouldn't want the full package? And yeah, but for her, but the thing is, what is interesting about Roxanne, and we see this in a scene, you know, Cyrano starts writing letters on behalf of Christian. They start the whole operation, and he writes a letter, and Christian signs them, and she's just full, like, it truly is head over heels. Once she starts to receive the letters from quote-unquote Christian, she is done. This woman is dead. She's so in love. But there's a scene where, and then we can move on to talk about Christian. There's a scene where Christian says, okay, that's it. I'm going to talk to her in person. I'm going to declare my love. That's enough letters. And Cyrano is like, no, you're not ready. I can write the stuff and you can memorize it. And he's like, Christian says, no, I'm going to talk to her.
Yes.
And of course, we see when he tries to talk to her, you know, Christian, he just doesn't have it. He can't. So he says, I love you. And she's okay. Can you elaborate? I love you a lot. Can you elaborate more? So, and then after he fails to actually create poetry on the fly, as she would want him, she says, no, go away. I don't like you anymore. You are terrible. I don't like you. Go away. So we can see from this reaction that Roxanne has that, yes, she wanted the full package. Of course, she put the words with the face. Wonderful. But as soon as the words weren't there, she wasn't interested anymore.
That's an interesting aspect of Roxanne. And a key factor for the story. Yeah. So Christian, good bridge to the next character, Christian. So we see a very handsome soldier, also very skilled.
Yeah? Oh, yeah.
Very strong, very skilled.
Yes.
He also looked to be very self-confident, yeah? Because maybe he knew, okay, I'm a good soldier, I'm handsome, mm-hmm. I'm young, and so on. So we see that. But he's also aware of a certain weakness, and he knows that very well. He's very good. He's very bad with words. This is why he approaches Cyrano and goes into this deal of borrowing Cyrano's words, kind of. So it's also a very interesting combination, yeah? And I think that even though the character might seem flat, because, of course, he's the one who doesn't say much, he's just the one who looks pretty, the actor himself did a great job to convey much more emotions through looks and movements and gestures than just standing there and looking pretty. Yeah. Mm. So he gave it a lot of more depth than the character itself might have.
I do agree with that very much, because that's what I wanted to say. In fact, that yeah, he has more depth of emotions. He lacks the words, but he doesn't lack bravery or courage, or, you know, we actually, because everything is overshadowed by the beauty of Cyrano's words, he doesn't really get the chance to show it off for Christian, right? He doesn't really have this chance in a world of words, he will lose, but, you know, perhaps in a world of other things, he might win. He is a good man. He is an honorable man.
Yes.
He's a soldier. He there's a scene at the end when they're already being sent to war and they've been fighting the Spanish and they're hungry. This whole Cyrano's regiment has been sent to war and Roxanne has been left behind. Cyrano has been sending letters every day and Christian doesn't even know about it. And there's a moment where he has to fight for Roxanne. She comes in and he fights so valiantly. And, you know, there's much more to him than yes. just a pretty face. And I think it could have been very, you know, picking the wrong actor would have, you know, destroyed the character. But mm-hmm. definitely Vincent Perez, he does offer much more depth than you could read on the page, I guess.
Yes. Yes, and what the character kind of maybe also gives, you know, just, you know, the skilled, pretty-faced soldier. And if he had the chance to show all his other qualities, yeah, he would have had other chances, maybe, yeah. But, yeah, he was dueling with Cyrano in a battle that he couldn't win, yeah, with yes. poetry and words.
Yes. However, let's bring it back to a little bit. Like, however, he's kind of eager to be physical with Roxanne throughout.
Totally.
Right? Yeah, I mean,
but as you mentioned, he was honorable, so he was not really being the macho. He knew that he had a certain charm, and that he could really woo women very well. So he is aware of his effect on women. He, of course, he is not the soft romantic, you know, super sensitive, but he also knew, okay, this is a lady and.
Yes.
Somehow I have to behave.
Well, that was his language. Yeah. But
kind of like a Casanova.
Yeah. But unfortunately style. Unfortunately, that didn't work for Roxanne because she was of a much more elevated mind, yes. intellect, everything. All right. So we have talked about the three main characters. Do you want to mention any other characters that you like in the movie? I do have one.
You do, please go ahead.
Yeah, you know, this movie has a lot of characters, lots of soldiers.
Yes.
We have an antagonist, which is the Duc de Guiche. He's the bad guy in the movie. He's always trying to undermine Cyrano, etc. But there is one particular character that I need to mention that is, I think, my favorite character in the whole movie. And this is a character of Boulanger-Pâtissier. This is he's a baker. But he's also a poet, Ragueneau. So Ragueneau is—he actually shows up in the whole movie throughout. He's the baker, the pastry chef, and he owns where Cyrano always goes to eat, and basically kind of hosts all the soldiers and stuff. But he's also a poet. And he dreams of writing poetry, and he's always, you know, dreaming of art, writing, and, you know, I really deeply identify with this character.
Yes, well, he really embodies two things that you love, bakery and poetry and literature.
He does. I do love baking and writing, so I do identify with this character a lot. And when we talk about some of my favorite things, I think when we talk about favorite things, my favorite thing is going to involve Ragueneau. We can leave it at that for now.
So go ahead. This is really your favorite scene?
Yeah, so we can talk about our favorite scene. So a favorite or key scene. So one of my favorite scenes involves Ragueneau. And again, we're going back to this being a play. And this scene takes place at Ragueneau's bakery because that's the place where Roxanne has asked Cyrano to meet her to ask for his help with Christian. So to involve setting as well. We get to this scene and we see a beautiful 17th century French bakery in action. This is a feast for the eyes. So we see a very busy bakery. I mean, lots of bakers, helpers in their uniforms, all in white. And you know, the production of so much bread and pastries is just like a huge enterprise. I mean, this was not a small bakery. It was a big bakery. And Ragueneau and his wife are talking. And there's my favorite moment of the whole movie, I will say. Well, yeah, not there's another one, but this is top one. It's when, you know, when is, you know, helping customers, helping people, and then the wife comes in with bags, which were essentially, they call it bags, but they were essentially like a paper cones that will serve for people to carry the pastries when they bought them. So she comes in with this basket full of bags, but the paper cones. Okay, I brought you some bags. And he looks, oh, thank you very much. But then he starts looking at the paper. And it's like, my book, my poetry book.
Yeah, so she had taken the leaves. The pages of his favorite books.
And they made them into cones. And he's suffering. He's like, no. And he's reading the insides. Not this one. And then this little boy comes in and he orders the pastries. And then he says, can I have a bag? And then he's like, no, this one. No, this one.
Not this poem.
Not this poem. Anyway, that is my absolutely favorite scene because I could see myself being the same. Now talking more seriously, this is a man who is like I embody the love of pastries and writing. Ragueneau, he is a representation of two very important French qualities, which is love of language, love of art, but also love of food.
Yeah.
And refinement of his sense. This is a man who elevates everything to the level of art. And this is a man who's always living at that level. He's a funny character. He's play for laughs.
Yes.
He's a comedic character in the movie, but he's representing these two very important characteristics of what we think a love of food, which is pastry. I mean, imagine
fine pastry, yeah.
Refined mm-hmm. pastry making mm-hmm. and poetry. So that's poetry. Why I love this character very much. Yes. It's my favorite. He's my favorite.
Nene, and I think through Ragueneau, we have most, not the only ones, but most of the humorous elements in the film. Because as we mentioned in the introduction, there's of course a lot of drama and so on, and romanticism, humor. Yeah, there's a lot of humor in the film, and Ragueneau contributes to most of the humorous scenes in the film. Okay, so any other scene that you would like to go through?
Well, I think we cannot do an episode about Cyrano without talking about the balcony scene.
Of course not. I was just about to say that.
Yeah, do you wanna talk about it?
It is definitely one of my favorites, but not the only one that I have. The balcony scene is, of course, pretty much at the core of the story. Yeah. So the famous balcony scene displays Roxane in a very white summery gown, standing on a warm summer night. There's a soft breeze flowing. And Cyrano and Christiane are standing under the balcony, underneath the balcony, covered a little bit by trees. And this is where Cyrano kinds of borrows most of his spoken words to Christiane. Before that, he had been writing most of the letters, writing letters in the name of Christiane for Roxane. So this is the first time that Christiane is supposed to really talk, and they are supposed to play this game of, okay, you learned the words by heart, so you go and tell her, and I stand just near you in case you forget something, yeah? So we see these two men underneath the balcony, and he starts reciting all these beautiful words for Roxane. And it gets darker and darker and darker. And at some point, Christiane forgets something, and Cyrano jumps in. And he, of course, uses the moment and the advantage that it's getting darker to jump in. He pushes Christiane away, and he goes from underneath the balcony and keeps on talking to Roxane. This is one of the most romantic and beautiful dialogues of the entire film. Yes. And it's also a nice, it's like a nice little, not a battle, but it's a beautiful exchange between both of them, because it's not only Christiane / Cyrano talking, but it's also Roxane responding and reacting to what she's hearing. Yeah.
Yes.
It is a beautiful scene. And at the end of the scene, Cyrano kind of says, of his head and of his face, that Christiane can just go ahead, and he has just prepared the setting for him. And Christiane uses the moment and goes up the balcony and gives Roxane a super beautiful and romantic, passionate kiss. So it's definitely a key scene and a beautifully made scene. You really feel in that moment that you are in that moment, in that summer evening, feeling this breeze through the leaves of the trees, and you have the air of the summer night.
Yeah. In your nose. Oh, Gabby, yeah. And not only that, you know, the whole scene is perfect in terms of sound, music, the dialogue, the everything. But at the end of the scene, it starts to rain. So you also have this rain coming in. So you have every element. You have the super flowy white gown. You have the breathe. You have the words. You have the French. You have Christiane going up in a balcony, and then the rain. I mean, it's you know, I just looking at it as an adult, I'd say this is a beautiful scene. But just thinking back to when we were young, watching this, we lost our minds.
We were most influential. And we were certainly very impressed by that. And it is the core of the story. It really pretty much displays what this triangle was about.
Exactly. I mean, the mind, the body, the soul of the triangle. You know, it happens right at that scene. It is the most important scene. Obviously, it is when kind of Christiane realizes that Cyrano. You know, he starts to suspect that Cyrano loves Roxane. He doesn't say it. He doesn't have time. And you know, when we see Cyrano as his saddest, essentially, he prepared the setting for Christiane to go in and have his kiss.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a triumph.
It's a triumph. And as every scene of the film, because there is not one scene that is too much, you know, where there's some films that you say, okay, what you just see scenes and you say, okay, this scene really adds something to the film. And this is something that doesn't happen in this film. Yeah. Every scene gives you a very specific and important piece of information for the story. Mm. And every scene is orchestrated perfectly. This dynamic that we mentioned at the beginning, this fast-paced rhythm of the entire story, it is on the balcony scene. It is also perfectly displayed. Yeah. This choreography between the dialogue and all the other elements, yeah, that we mentioned. It is just beautiful. Yes.
What other key scenes, what other favorite scenes before we move on?
I have two small ones. And they both include Roxane. And I don't know if it's, maybe I like them because when I saw the film, I was a young girl and I was very impressed, yeah? And maybe I was more vulnerable for romanticism. I don't know.
Like now.
One of my favorite scenes is pretty much at the beginning, where Roxane reads one of the first letters that she gets from Cyrano. And it's a very, as I said, the setting of these rooms in Roxane's house is not, it's not showing much. It's very sparely decorated. And so we see Roxane and a lady who's helping her with her gown, I don't know, with her toiletries, I don't know. So it's just a very bare room. There's this other woman, Roxane, a candle, and Roxane is reading this letter. And in this letter, he says something like, if the words would be for the ear, you would have to read this letter with your lips. Something really romantic. So she is so overwhelmed by the beauty of this words that she faints. She faints while reading this letter. And the lady who's helping her, her maid, just takes her, exhales, oh, it takes her and starts kind of waving the letter in place to give her some air. So this is one of my favorite scenes because it is very romantic. The words that she's reading are really touching. And as a woman, I completely fell for it. And also because it's humorous at the same time. This exaggerated feint of Roxanne and then the lady just improvising and waving the letter in front of Roxanne's face. It is just funny and great.
Yeah, that is a beautiful scene because we see how she's falling in love with the words, and the words in this case are absolutely sensuous. I mean, this is deep sensuality, but set through, you know, through the beauty of language. I mean, in an elevated set, all in an elevated way, which makes it much more appealing to women. I must say.
Yes, maybe.
Yeah.
And yeah.
What is the other one?
It's also, as I said, with Roxanne, and also in her house, is the scene where she, very fast and improvised, she marries Christian. Through many funny detours in the story, somehow they decide, okay, before you go to war, we should get married. And there's a little monk who happens to know Roxanne and who happens to be at her house.
I think he
delivering
had
a message.
No, he delivered a message, and she improvised the message on the letter saying that she had to marry
exactly
Christian.
So because of this and that, they say, okay, we have to marry right away. And they improvise a wedding in her house. And this scene is also one of these humorous scenes. It's funny moments of the film where everyone plays a role. It's also a very sparely decorated room, but every maid, monk, and Christian and Roxanne, they all bring something, a drape for the table, a chandelier, a candle, a Bible, and within just 5 minutes, also a perfect choreography of all the characters moving within this room. They set up an altar, and the monk marries Christian and Roxanne. And exactly this kind of fast-paced ensemble
from
all the characters, I think it's just funny and great.
Oh, it is delicious. I love that scene too because, yeah, I think it brings the best of theater to movie. It brings the best of theater in which you have an ensemble. You have an ensemble working together to create the sense of something, right? They are all working together. It's a choreography, it's a dance, and it's very much of something that you will see in theater where they have to create a scene right in front of your eyes. I love that scene too. It's very funny and it's very effective too. And right after they get married, Duc de Guiche as a sends Cyrano's regiment to war so he could separate them, because Duc de Guiche, all this time, he has wanted to marry Roxanne and he was coming to see her, and that's why she planned this super quick wedding so he couldn't you know, propose or ask for her hand anymore. Anyway, I agree with that one. That's beautiful. So, Gabby, anything else we have to say about this movie?
Well, Nene, apart from the fact that we love it, I think we have to give it some wicks and candles. So after going through all the things we love about this film and what we feel fascinated about and what we most cherish about the film, how many wicks and candles would you give Cyrano de Bergerac?
Jeez, this one is hard. This one is really hard because I will be tempted to give it 10 just because of the place that it has in my heart. Very first French movie I saw that I had conscious of. And wow, we were lucky. It was Cyrano de Bergerac, 1990. So lucky. Perhaps I'm going to give it 9.5 if I'm being very, very objective. If I'm being subjective, I will give it 10 because I love everything about it. But if I'm going to be very objective, I'm going to be given 9.5 just because the ending is a tad long. The ending is a bit long. It's a bit confusing at the end with all of the battle. You have to kind of watch it a few times, the ending, to understand what's happening. So for that reason, I'm going to give it 9.5 just because it becomes a little muddled at the end.
Okay. Well,
what about you?
I'm going to go full emotional. And I'm going to give it a 10 because, as I said, this film plays a big role in my life, actually. And I associate a lot of good memories and good feelings with this film, with the time we watched it in. And, of course, I know that what you mean. Yeah, the last scene tends to be, you know, a little bit long and dramatic and so on. We could, of course, discuss Gerard Depardieu himself. Yeah, playing Cyrano, even though he was so amazing, Cyrano, you have the feeling that one of both, Gerard Depardieu, kept being Cyrano for the rest of his career. Yeah.
Oh.
So you don't know who is more Gerard or Cyrano. Yeah.
Wow.
Of course, for the film itself, it was amazing. But if you follow Gerard Depardieu's career after this, you see that he's still playing Cyrano.
Wow, that is an interesting, yeah. But yeah, that is very interesting.
So who's influencing?
He couldn't shed the character, I guess.
Such an amazing character. Mm-hmm. I guess he couldn't really separate himself from Cyrano afterwards. Yeah.
Oh wow. Well, I wouldn't either. What a character!
What a character! So, but as I said, putting those aside, I would go for a 10. Maybe the color of the film, maybe it's because it's a little bit pale, but maybe this is a very technical thing. That it's all, even though the views are so beautiful, the settings are so well done, and the scenes are so breathtaking, the color of the film itself is kind of pale.
No. Yeah,
I
think it has something that we should add for people. It's not an easy film to find nowadays, unless you find a DVD. It is a hard one to find, at least here in Canada. It was hard. I had to watch a YouTube version, and obviously the quality of the image is quite low, but I'm sure as the film was intended to be seen, I'm sure it's quite colorful, Gabby, because this is 1990.
Because I saw it, I saw it on DVD.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, yeah.
But this is something really
technical.
I shouldn't give it that much of a relevance. I said I'm going to go for 10 Wicks and Candles because it means so much to me.
Well, there we have it. 19 and a half candles from Gabby. What a wonderful film. We highly recommend it, obviously, if you can find it. This is the peak of French cinema, talking about their culture. All of these films usually that we're going to be talking about throughout the podcast, they are trying to say something about their cultures. And what they're trying to say is, you know, our culture is important. Our culture is refined and beautiful. There are a bit of propaganda. This whole movement of period films in the 90s in Europe is a bit of a movement showing the beauty of their culture to the world.
Yes. And you know what? There's one character that we mention a lot, and that is maybe one of the most important ones. It is the French language. And this really steals the scene.
Yes.
The core, the heart of the entire film story, etc. It is the French language. And that's what you are talking about, what it personifies, the French language. This is the secret character in the film that really steals everybody's hearts.
Yes, the French language steals the movie.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's the episode. Thank you very much for listening. And thank you, Gabby, for this conversation.
Thank you, Nene. And stay tuned and follow us on Instagram at Wicks and Candles.
Yeah, and see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wicks and Candles is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
So go ahead and subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Wicks and Candles. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
Wicks and Candles is written, hosted, and produced by Andreina Romero and Gabriela Morgan Romero. The image design is by Pamela Rollin. The podcast theme music is the Concerto for Two Violins in D minor by Johann Sebastian Bach.